the 46th Psalm, verse 10 and verse 11. The first part of the psalm, he speaks about an earthquake, and he said, "We'll not fear, God's with us." Then he speaks about a tidal wave, and he said, "We won't fear, God is with us." And in the midst of an earthquake, and in the midst of a tidal wave, here's strange words to humanity. Verse 10, "Be still." You mean be still in an earthquake? You mean be still in a tidal wave? "Be still and know that I am God. I will be exalted among the heathen. I will be exalted in the earth. The Lord of hosts is with us. The God of Jacob is our refuge. Let go and know." That word "let go," or "be still" rather, means to fall down, just cast yourself upon, or let go. Be still. Fall down. Cast yourself upon. Be still. Let go. Who's running the universe according to you today? There are a lot of folks who think about the universe and the vastness of it and the immensity of it. The atheist looks at the universe with bitterness in his heart and said there surely could not be a sovereign, omnipotent, all-wise, and all-loving God. For my son died on the battlefield, and I see poverty, and I see heartache, and I see disease. And if there was a great, good God, then he'd not allow all that to happen. Then there's another crowd that they're not atheists, but they're the heathen. And they said, well, there are a lot of gods running the universe, and there's a struggle among the gods even. And we have to try to appease one or the other and find out who's the greatest. And so the heathen cast their baby to the crocodile, trying to appease the god of the rivers, and they offer sacrifices to the god of the hills and the gods of the mountains, saying that that's the god that rules their particular domain. Then the god, the evolutionist, comes along and said, well, it's the survival of the fittest. Things are getting better, but only those who are stronger will survive, and actually there's no one in charge. It's just happened, and you have to climb over each other to get to the top, the survival of the fittest. And someone else comes along and says, well, everything's God, so they don't kill an ant or roach or anything else. All life is sacred, for everything's God. The chair's God, and I'm God, and the bench is God, and, you know, and the vegetables are God, and everything's God. That's a pretty cold thing to live by. Then someone else comes along and said, well, fatalism is just a doctrine of chance, and the matter is just luck and good luck to you, know. Hope you have good luck today. Then someone else will say, well, matter's eternal, materialist, and I'm going to live today, and all this is for eternity. Now, with these ideas, two philosophies will come out. Either you'll be an Epicurean that lives for pleasure, and since there's no real God running the universe, and I'm going to get the most out of this life, because when you die, you're dead, and it's all over, and I aim to squeeze every drop of enjoyment out of this life, regardless of what it costs me or anybody else. I'm going to get it while it's getting, and when I'm gone, then I'll be gone. Or on the other hand, you can face the people who would believe any of those that I've mentioned, that it may not be a turn to pleasure, but they'll say, well, this is a cruel, hard universe, and I've been hurt, and I'll never be hurt again. And so they live a life of a stoic, unmoved and unstirred. They're not going to allow themselves to get carried away with the problems of life, and so they live a life without any feeling or emotion whatsoever. Neither of these ideas or philosophies are Christian. Who's running the universe? Well, according to the Christian, God's running the universe. God's in charge. Now, when we think about God in charge, excuse me. In the text here, God is speaking to his people. He's not talking to the world. And David writes about a hurricane, sort of atmospheric conditions. He talks about a tidal wave, and then he talks about the matter of an earthquake. And God said, in the middle of this, I want you be still, let go, and know that I'm God. And God addresses that to his people. And could you consider, first of all, the problem this morning? God's people is restlessness. God said, be still. God says, let go. God says, roll yourself upon, cast yourself upon. And we've spoken in these few Sundays preceding this one, that God wanted our treasure, and we spoke on the grace of giving. Then last Sunday, God wants our talents. Yes, He wants that in order to glorify Him. But God supremely wants our trust. God wants us to trust Him where we cannot trace Him. And God said, be still and know that I'm God. And ever since Adam grasped for that which did not belong to him, instigated by Satan who grasped for that that did not belong to him but belonged only to God, man has been a restless creature in the matter of life, the storms and the problems of life. And our problem, it's strange that many Christians, all Christians, most of the Christians, have an assurance of a God that'll keep their soul. And they stand up in the testimony meeting and said, I know whom I have believed, and I'm persuaded that He's able to keep that which I've committed unto Him against that day. Thank God I'm saved. Or they may quote John 10:27, my sheep hear mine own voice, and I know them, and they follow me, and I give unto them eternal life, and they shall never perish, neither shall any man pluck them out of my hand. My Father which gave them me is greater than all, and no man is able to pluck them out of my Father's hand. I and my Father are one. And they said, thank God, I'm saved. My soul is saved. I'm going to heaven when I die. And they, listen, they're right in their theology when it comes to the matter of their soul's salvation. But they don't have any assurance that the God that saves them can guide and direct and control their life. That's different. Assurance that we're going to heaven when we die. But no assurance that God is interested in taking care of me here and now. That's what the song was about this morning. And when we boil it down, then we become practical atheists concerning the present, but orthodox concerning the future. Is a God who runs a universe, can He govern my life? Can He take care of the problems of life? Can He really master and control my life? Can I really put my life in His hands and God will do right with me? Or must I have to look after my own interests and hurt and injure other people and looking after my interest? And when I'm looking after my interest, then I'm not looking after God's interest, and that becomes destructive. And self is a sinner. The hippies have copped out on life. They said it's become too involved, and I just don't want to get involved with it. And they've thrown away responsibilities. And they're going back to nature, and we're just going to take a day at a time. We're not going to work, and we're going to whatever we find, and we're going to live off of it. They've copped out on life. On the other hand, we have a generation who are so involved with life that its life is complicated, and all of their life is this planning and scheming and working to make life work and to make ends meet and to get along. And on one hand, there's indifference. On the other hand, there's complication. And Christians have got hung up on this matter trying to help God run their lives. Now, the God that you said saved you, can He master, can He control, can He guide your life? And when He guides your life, will He do it for His glory and your best interest? Will He do that? God said, be still. And that's our problem. And this fear of God mismanaging our life was given in the Garden of Eden when the devil came in and said, God is holding something back from you that you rightfully deserve. And the eyes said it looked good. It appealed to the eyes. It appealed to the flesh. It appealed to pride. And man reached out and said, I can't trust God to think about my affairs, and I've got to look after my affairs. And how tragic that Christians think that God is not really interested in their lives and their ambitions and goals and drives, and that God cannot be trusted in this matter, and so I'll have to look out after myself when I think about self and being the sinner. In the 81st Psalm, did you know that here I think of this matter, the purpose of God. Excuse me. In the 81st Psalm, God is speaking about His people. And when I try to have my plans about my life, and there are a lot of folks sitting here, and you have never one time asked God about direction or what shall you do in life or with your life, and yet you're Christian. There are a lot of others who have said, Lord, here's my life, but then you take it back. You give it to Him to govern one day, and you take it back the next day. And two people cannot run your life. It's not God and you. It's God runs your life, or we try to run our lives. Now, in the 81st Psalm, God speaking to his people. Look what he says down in verse 9 of the 81st Psalm. There shall no strange God be in thee, neither shalt thou worship any strange God. I am the Lord thy God which brought thee out of the land of Egypt. Open thy mouth wide and I will fill it. He takes them back to salvation. He said, I'm the God that delivered you in Egypt. I'm the God that you're talking about. Blessed assurance. Jesus is mine. But now watch. But my people would not hearken to my voice, and Israel would none of me, so I gave them up unto their own heart's lust, and they walked after their own counsels, their own plans, their own wisdom. Oh, that my people, God said, oh, I was interested in their welfare. Oh, that my people had hearkened unto me, and Israel had walked in my ways. What would he have done? I should soon have subdued their enemies and turned my hand against their adversaries. The haters of the Lord should have submitted themselves unto him, but their time should have endured forever. He should have fed them also with the finest of the wheat, and with the honey out of the rock would I have satisfied thee. He said, I would have protected you. I would have satisfied them. I would have defended them. I would have thought about their interest. He said, oh, I wish my people would have hearkened unto my voice. And in the text, God is saying, be still and know that I'm God. Years ago, the scientists had the thing all mixed up. They thought that the earth was the center of the universe. And until they discovered that the sun was the center of our universe, they never could have put a man on the moon. And things did not work out right until they got the sun in the center. They're Christians who have the earth in the center. That's the self. That's their life in the center. And the Son of God on the outside. And things never work right until you get the S-O-N in the center. And when you get the Son of God in the center, then our life revolves around him and everything comes out all right for the glory of God and for our benefit. But when we get personal, we get the self in the center and God on the outside on the fringes of our life, we neither glorify him nor do our best interests come about. And God said, now be still. Turn loose and know that I'm God. And this matter of self, this matter of turning loose, and we grasp and we just can't bear to turn loose. I know a lady today that's a cripple. That doesn't have to be a cripple. You know why? She can't turn loose of her walker, but she can walk. And there's a fear of living without that walker, and her mind is so afraid that she cannot turn loose of a walker. And so the rest of her life, she's glued to a walker simply because she cannot bring herself to turn loose and trust the legs that can walk. And God said, listen, turn loose, let go, and know that I'm God. We think about life, think about ego. Well, everybody wants to feel important. We're made in the image of God, and everybody has a desire for importance and well-being. And instead of allowing God to deal with the matter of popularity and our importance in life where he wants to, and what happens? And we have to make sure that everybody else knows that we're important. And that begins down in the kindergarten. Here's a little kid that disrupts the entire class. And he said, hey, look at me. That goes in the junior department. Hey, look at me. That goes in the young people department. Hey, look at me. Make sure I'm seen. Look at me. Make sure I'm seen. That goes all the way through life. Look at me. Pay attention to me. I'm important. And so what happened? We are disruptive in society because we're trying to impress people that we're important and get their attention. And we, instead of turning that over to God, God, listen, God will make us important. Why? We're his child. An ego problem. And God said, turn loose. And they got home problems. Their mothers and dads here today. My, you're torn all to pieces. Your children giving you a holy fit. And you've done what you may, and you haven't, but you can't take it to God and take your hands off of it. You have to put your hands back on it again, and you can't believe that God really will straighten out the problem. God said, turn loose. Their husbands and their wives that are trying to straighten the other out, and they are desperately afraid. Well, if I turn loose, and God said, turn loose, and let me straighten them out. and they spend their lives in a power struggle at home, and God said, let go, turn loose, and know that I'm God. I go on through life with business problems. The business, can God take care of your business in rough times and good times? And you say, well, this is a crooked world, and if I'm going to be a proper businessman and make a gain, then I'm going to have to adjust to society, and I'll have to cut corners, and I'll have to do shady deals. You don't have to do that. God said, turn loose, and know that I'm God. And others listen, not only that, but finance problems. I can't afford to tithe. I can't afford to give. I just can't afford to give. Listen, if you trust God with your soul, you ought to be able to trust Him with your money. I can't afford to. God said, turn loose. I think about courtship. And man, you watch people in courtship and marriage. You watch them climb over each other and injure each other and hurt each other before marriage and after marriage. And what is it? It's an idea that I got to be happy. And if I don't look out, and it makes no difference who I hurt or who I injure, if I don't look out after myself, God's not going to look after me. And after all, then I'll be left high strung, and I'll not have out of life what I ought to have. Can God take care of your mate for life? Can God take care of your marriage? Can God bring joy into your marriage that's already consummated through the years? Can God manage your marriage? Can He? He's the one that ordained it. And then I could get the matter of pleasure. Well, I got to have pleasure. And so people, I'm going to have pleasure. It makes no difference how it hurts or harms or injures somebody else. And they march through life grappling for pleasure. Security. Here, folks, today, and I'm sure the question's in your heart and mind, your husband's going to be with the Lord. You're up in years. And the thought of an old folks' home just frightens you to death. The thought of being helpless frightens you to death. The thought of not being able to take care of yourself and clothe yourself and feed yourself is a fear, and it's a legitimate fear according to the world. Listen, can the God that saved you and kept you young in life, can He take care of you in old age? And David prayed, oh God, when I'm old and gray-headed, forsake me not until I've showed this generation Thy power and Thy glory. And the God who was with you in youth can, listen, be the God of your senior years. God said, turn loose. That's security. Now, that's the problem. It's a fact of restlessness. I told you about flying that airplane, and it's not much of an airplane. It's called an air coupe. Doesn't have any rudders. Got elevators, you know. Man alive, and ailerons, but it doesn't have any rudders. The rudders that guide your direction this way. And that flying, if I'd have started off in it, might not have been so bad. But I'd fly another aircraft, and you don't get into that thing like a feather on a... in the middle of a hurricane, I mean, you really feel insecure. And you come in and the wind's crossways, and it turns the nose of the plane around into the wind. Here you are coming sideways. And you can't kick it out. There are no rudders to kick it out. You either drop a wing, you know, and come back around and back and forth and back and forth and try to wheedle in. But he said, you know what he said? He said, turn it loose. Did I hear what you said? Turn it loose. Well, I'll tear the landing gear off. Turn it loose. And you come in for landing, you come in sideways, and here it is. Turn it loose. Well, it'll tear the struts, the landing gear out from under it, the nose wheel. Turn it loose. And to my surprise, and the most difficult thing I've ever had to do in flying an airplane was take my hands off of it, and it landed, and it didn't tear the landing gear out, and it straightened out. And God said, I don't make any difference how crosswise it may seem. God said, turn loose, be still, and know that I'm God. Now that's a problem. We can't turn loose of life. And God said, you turn it loose. Now would you consider, secondly, not only the problem, but would you consider the command? He said, be still. That's a problem, restlessness. But now the command is, be still, stop, fall down, let go. Not to a blind faith, but to a living God. Now hear me this morning. God is a personal God. When He loves you, it's just as personal as if there were no other creature on the face of God's earth, in earth or heaven. It's a personal relationship. And it's like there's nobody else existing. It's just a loving relationship of a father with his child. And Jesus said, come unto me, all ye that labor and heavy laden, and I'll give you rest. I rest from the struggle. Take my yoke upon you, and learn of me, for I'm meek and lowly in heart. Quit your struggling, and you'll find rest unto your souls. Now, he said, stop it. That's the command. Now, he commands us to turn loose. Why? Because he's a personal God. God's got time for you. Did you know that? God has time for you. God who runs the universe. God who puts the Milky Way in all of the galaxies and he puts them there and they're there. God has personal time for every one of his creatures. God's got time for you. Now, you believe that? He's so personal, and for because of time, just let me just name some of them. But he's a personal God. In 1 Peter 5, verse 7, he said, casting all your care upon him, for he careth for you. Christian, God cares for you. How does he care for you? Like as a father pitieth his children, so the Lord pitieth them that fear him. And any dad that loves his children, brother, cares about their tears and their heartaches and their problems and their sorrows. And he's got time to listen. And sometimes an earthly parent may not have time. But God said, casting all your care. Now, that may seem insignificant to others, but brother, if it causes care to you, God said, you cast it upon me. And sometimes God's people will laugh at another person in the Christian faith, and I don't understand what in the world that causes them so much excitement about. Well, it just doesn't happen to be you. It happens to be them, and that's their life, and that's where they're made, and that's where they look at life. And God said, casting all your care upon him. And we may laugh at their cares, and we may say, I don't see why in the world you're worried about that. But God said, listen, cast all your cares, the little, the big. Cast them all. God's personal. How personal is God? Well, when David began to enumerate, he said, Psalm 34. Let me read this from Psalm 34:4. Most of you can quote it, but let me just read this. Psalm 34, and it goes along with cares. 34:4. David said this, I sought the Lord, and he heard me and delivered me from all my fears. Now, they're personal fears. There are things that you're afraid of that other people aren't afraid of. There are things that I'm afraid of that other people aren't afraid of. They're my fears. And David said, the Lord heard me and delivered me from all my fears. And you have personal fears that are geared to you. And God said, now David said, he delivered me from all my fears. The 40th Psalm, he said, I cried unto the Lord, and he heard my cry. You mean God can hear my cry? And there are over 3 billion people on the face of God's earth, and God can personally hear my cry. Know what I'm talking about? Have time for me? Yes, that's what the God of the Bible is. He heard my cry. David said, the Lord is my shepherd. You mean he can guide 3 million people or 3 billion people, and he can still give me personal direction at the same time? Yes, sir. He's my shepherd. The Job said, my record is in heaven and my witness is on high. It's personal. In the 31st Psalm, verse 15, David said, my times are in thy hands. My times, that's personal. Turn to the 139th Psalm. David said, you know when I'm down, you know when I'm up. You mean when I got the blues, God knows about it? Yes, sir. You know when I get up in the morning? Yes, sir. You know when I go to bed at night? Yes, sir. You know what he does? Does he know what I do all between? Yes, sir. Does he know what I dream about? Yes, sir. And he does so in such a relationship, it's as though there's nobody else but you living. That's personal. And I'm going to show you how personal he is to you in just a moment. Look at verse 1. O Lord, Psalm 139. O Lord, thou hast searched me. And know me, God knows us. We don't know ourselves, but he does. Thou knowest my down sitting. I sit down in a chair. He knows about it. And he also knows spiritually if I'm down in the dumps. He knows about that. And mine uprising, he knows when I get up in the morning. He knows when I'm on the mountaintop. Thou understandest my thought afar off, and lots of times there's things that go through my head that I try to figure out and I try to reason out, and God understands my reasoning afar off, and I don't understand. Read on. Thou compassest my path and my lying down when I walk to work or when I walk to school, when I walk to my job, when I walk to where I'm going. Thou compassest my path. God's keeping watch over my path. And what else? And my lying down and art acquainted with all my ways. He knows all about me. He's a personal God. Now look how personal he is. Now this over my head. Well, look down at verse 13. For thou hast possessed my reins. Thou hast covered me in my mother's womb. I will praise thee, for I'm fearfully and wonderfully made. Marvelous are thy works, and that my soul knoweth right well. My substance was not hid from thee when I was made in secret in the moment of my conception. God, listen, God, in that moment, he knew me. My name's in the Lamb's Book of Life, and it was there before the foundation of the world. The name, he knew me, listen, before he ever made me. He knew me in conception. In conception, that moment, listen, the color of my hair, my stature, my eye, the color of my eyes, the color of my hair, my teeth, my bone structure, all of this, listen, God wrote it in his book. Read on. My substance was not hid from thee when I was made in secret and curiously wrought in the lowest parts of the earth. Thine eyes did see my substance, yet being unperfect. And in thy book all my members were written, which in continuance were fashioned, when as yet there was none of them. How precious also are thy thoughts unto me, O God. How great is the sum of them. God is a God of eternity. Hear me. And God knew me just as well in eternity past as he'll ever know me in eternity future. He knew me. He wrote in his book, listen, the color of my skin, the color of my eyes, my bone structure, my mental capacity. God wrote it all down. When did he do it? Not at the moment of conception. He wrote it back in eternity. God knows me. Now let me tell you something else. In the moment of your conception, approximately 250,000 other people were potentially present, and God selected me and rejected 249,999 in preference to me. Now let that soak in. When God, the moment when you were conceived at that moment of conception, God Almighty rejected approximately 250,000 other potential people, and God selected one little tiny sperm that, listen, you can put on the end of a needle and not see it with a natural eye. God did that, and God, listen, accepted me, claimed me, selected me, and I'm here today because of a personal love from God. That's pretty personal. That's pretty personal. Now, that kind of God in mind, God said, now listen, turn loose. That's command, turn loose. He's a God not only that's personal, but he's a God that's powerful. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth, and I want to tell you, it took some power. When God, listen, not power that because he struggled with it, but no, he upholds all things with the word of his power. He spake and it was done. In this world, this entire galaxy, this entire universe, so fathomless in its outreach, God did all that with the word of his power. His word is with power. He commanded and it was done. God said, turn loose, I love you. Turn loose, I'm personal. Turn loose, I've got adequate power to run your life. If I can run the universe, I can run your life. Turn it loose. Not only personal and powerful, but, brother, he's a present God. The 46th Psalm, twice he said, the Lord of hosts is with us. God's with you today. He's with every one of us collectively, but he's with every one of us individually as though he were not with anybody else in all the world. He's a present God. Not only a present God, but he's a loving God. John said, we've known and believed that God, the love that God hath to us. He loved us enough to save us. He loves enough to keep us. And lastly, he's a wise God. Don't you think it takes some wisdom just to make the universe? Don't you think it takes wisdom for God, my the planet? Don't you just leave the universe out? Don't you think it takes some wisdom to make the human body, the human personality, the body, the soul, the spirit? There's nothing so involved as a human being. And yet God in his wisdom made the body, made the stars, made the galaxies, made the earth. And God said on the basis, I've got wisdom, I'll make no mistake. Turn loose. I have power at my disposal. Turn loose. I love you. Turn loose. I'm personal. Turn loose. I'm personally interested in you and your problems. Turn loose. That's command. Listen, sometimes we think we're more loving and considerate. There's one thing about David. Many things about David. But did you know we get our idea about God all warped? David sinned. We say, well, man alive, then I'd rather be in man's hand than God's hand. But David said when he sinned, God said, you choose whether you flee before your enemies or be pestilence or whether you put yourself in my hand. And you know what David said?
he said this. David said, I'm in a great strait. Let us now fall into the hand of the Lord, for his mercies are great. And let me not fall into the hand of man. He said, no, sir, Lord, I don't want to flee before mine enemies. I'd rather fall into your hands. Why? Because even when you're chastening me, your mercies are great. I'd rather trust you than man. Let go. Now, what you consider lastly? God said what?
Be still. Let go. Fall down. That's a command. That's a problem. Restlessness, the problem is let go. Now, here's the command or the declaration of the promise.
He said, and know that I'm God. Now, you can't know that he's God in the sense that he can run your life until you take your hands off.
He said, know that I'm God.
Now, look at the 46th Psalm. And I will summarize by one word in just a moment, but the 46th Psalm. And he calls attention to this, and I just want to touch on it, and then I want to go to a man that he identifies himself with and let us see what God's telling us. 46th Psalm, verse 10. Be still and know that I'm God. I'm Elohim. That's power. Now, if you turn loose, what? I'll be exalted in the, what? Among the heathen. When you turn loose of your life, God, listen, there's only one place for God to help, and that's the exalted place. When God's exalted, then all my needs are met. He's glorified, and God's glorified. Listen. When God's glorified, you better believe my needs are met. I'll be exalted among the heathen. That'll touch the unsaved. You turn loose of your life. Let me have first place. I'll be exalted among the heathen. Do you? What else? I'll be exalted in the earth. That's where you live. Lead on. The Lord of hosts is with us. He sent all angelic armies of heaven are at my disposal. Let go. The Lord of hosts is with us. He's there presently waiting to meet the command of the supreme commander. He said, the Lord of hosts is with us. Now, here's what I want you to see. The God of Jacob is our refuge. Turn back to Genesis. And when we study Jacob, we'll be through. Genesis, chapter 25, verse 22. Here's a man that was named Jacob because of the fact that he was struggling for first place before, during, and after his birth. That his whole life was wrapped up to get ahead, to be first. And they named him that because of what transpired at his birth. And I want to read it. Genesis 22, verse 22. Verse 21 talks about Rebekah, his wife, conceived. And the children struggled together within her. And she said, if it be so, why am I thus? And she went to inquire of the Lord. And the Lord said unto her, two nations are in thy womb, and two manner of people shall be separated from thy bowels. The one people shall be stronger than the other people, and the elder shall serve the younger. That's God's plan. Now, Jacob set out to make sure that happened. That's God's business to make it happen. Jacob set out to make sure that it happened. Now, read verse 24. And when her days to be delivered were fulfilled, behold, there were twins in her womb. And the first came out red all over like an hairy garment, and they called his name Esau. And after that came his brother out, and his hand took hold on Esau's heel, grabbed him by the heel. And she named him Esau, heel grabber, supplanter, person that walks over people to get to the top. That's his name. And his name was called Jacob. Now watch him. Not too long go a long way, and one day Esau goes out to hunt, and he comes in, he's hungry. And here is supplanter. I got to get at it. I got to work at it. I got to get to the top. I got to get the blessing. I got to get it. 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 Verse 29, Jacob sawed pottage. Esau came from the field, and he was faint. He's tired. And Esau said to Jacob, feed me, I pray thee, with that same red pottage. For I'm faint, therefore was his name called Edom. And Jacob said, sell me this day thy birthright. Make a deal with you. Supplanter. I make a deal with you. Birthright for beans. He made a deal. The next chapter you find that he got this from his mother. Always that way, you know. He got that from his mother. 27th chapter, mother said, now, I remember what the Lord said, now the younger serve the elder, and I got to make sure it happens. And so she calls her son in. She said, Jacob, hey, come in now. Dad's fixed to die. He's going to bless Esau, and you're supposed to have the blessing. I'm going to make sure you have it. You go out, you know, and kill a kid and come in. I'll skin it, and I'll put the skin on the back of your hands, you know. I'll make him some venison, make him some meat. He wants to eat meat, and he's blind. He can't see, and we'll really pull a fast one on him. And so Jacob said, well, I'll seem like a deceiver. He was a deceiver. And he went out and he did that, and he came in and he put the skins on the back of his hand, and blind daddy Isaac, he said, you spell like Esau, but you talk like Jacob. He said, how in the world did you get all this so quick? He said, God help me. And what happened? He bargained for the blessing. All right, time will not permit, but just a few chapters later, he goes over to see an uncle of his, and oh my, it runs in the family. That is his wife's brother. I told you it was on the mother's side. He goes over there and he sees a young lady. He said, I'll make a deal with you. 7 years I'll work for her. But he met one that knew about bargaining. Boy, when he woke up the next morning on his honeymoon, he discovered he had the wrong one. And I'm sure God rung the bell and said, you remember lying to your blind daddy? Remember that? I'll make a deal with you. So he makes another deal. He works another 7 years. And then he goes out, and he said, I'll tell you what, he said, I'm going back home. And Laban said, don't go back home. God blessed me for you. He said, what'll I do for you? He said, I'll tell you, I'll make a deal with you. He said, you give me such and such cattle. And he said, I'll take the other. And I'm not going into detail, but in verse 41, the scripture says of the 30th chapter, came to pass, whensoever the stronger cattle did conceive, that Jacob laid the rods before the eyes of the cattle in the gutters, that they might conceive among the rods. But when the cattle were feeble, he put them not in, so the feeble were Laban's, and the stronger were Jacob's. He made sure that he got the strong cattle and Laban got the feeble cattle. I'll make a deal with you. My name's Jacob, buddy. I'll make a deal with you. 20 years he was making deals. And you read about the blight. He talks about the frost by night and the drought by day. And his wages changed 10 times and he was constantly looking after himself. One day he decides that he better get home. His uncle wasn't looking at him like he used to, and he better go home. And he heads home. And on the way home, all of us, he sent a message. He said, I want you to send a message. Tell my brother Esau that I walked all over and got the birthright and the blessing came. I'm coming home. And the messenger came back and said, he's coming to meet you, too. And not only that, brother, he's got 400 men with him. He said, I sure got to make another deal. Look at it. This is where a lot of you live every day of your life. God of Jacob! This is what you'll do today. This is what you did yesterday. This is what you do tomorrow. Always looking out and make sure that number one is taken care of. God can't take care of my needs. I've got to climb over anybody and everything to get my needs met. Jacob. And so, boy, he's scared to death. He said, boy, I just about played out, you know, on deals. But he said, I know what I'll do. Look at the 31st chapter. The 32nd chapter. And I'm trying to quit. But the 32nd chapter. Verse 6. The messenger's returned. He said, now, I want you to go. Well, let's just back up. Let's just don't miss the meat of this. Boy, he heads home and he sent messengers to Esau. And verse 4. And he commanded him, saying, thus shall you speak unto my lord Esau, thy servant Jacob saith thus, I have sojourned with Laban, and stayed there until now, and I have oxen and asses and men flocks and men servant and women servants. You impress him, tell him, you know, and I'm a big boy. You tell him, you know. But while you're telling him, impressing him, you tell him I want to find grace in his sight. How do I get things straight? And the messenger returned to Jacob, saying, we came to thy brother Esau, and also he cometh to meet thee. And 400 men with him. Then Jacob was greatly afraid and distressed, and he divided the people that was with him. Here he's planning again. And the flocks and herds and the camels in the two bands. And he said, I may get wiped out of one camp, but I won't lose all of them. And he said, if he shall come to the one company and smite it, then the other company which is left shall escape. He said, I'll get half of it left. I mean, if he hits one, we got time the rest of us get away. Planning. Read on. And then he decided, well, wait a minute now. I'm a fundamentalist. I think I better pray about this. Where you been all this other time? Where you been all the rest of the time? And he began to plead the promises like a fundamental Baptist. He said, God, you promised. He had all of his life bent, and trying to make sure that God kept his end of the deal. You promised? And he just said, oh, God, you know I didn't have anything when you laid your hand upon me. You know, God, you blessed me. You know, God, you gave all that. Oh, God, and I'm scared. Take care of me. Take care of the children. I'm scared to death. And he pled the promises. But, brother, he hadn't made any deal with God. He's still troubled. Then he said, well, I know what I'll do. All right, then. Look at verse 13. He got up from praying, and he's still struggling. He hadn't good. He prayed, but he's still struggling. While he was praying, he said, I wonder what world I can do next. How do I know that? Watch what he did. Look at him. And he, verse 12, he said, thou said, surely I will do thee good and make thy seed as the sand of the sea, and which cannot be numbered for multitude. And he lodged there that same night and took of that which came to his hand a present. For Esau, his brother, 200 she-goats and 20 he-goats, 200 ewes and 20 rams, 30 milk camels with the colts, 40 kine, 10 bulls, 20 she-asses, and 10 foals. He said, I'll buy him. Make a deal with you. And then what do? He said, you divide them into companies, and while I'm buying him, I'll impress him with almost how much that I have. And I'm going to be, by the time that he comes to the last bunch of that drove of the flocks and so forth, by that time, maybe his temper will be cooled, and I'll be on the back end. And he put, listen, the wife that he didn't love too much, he put her on the back, and then he took the one he loved real well, put her on way back. What's he doing? His name's Jacob. He said, I got God can't run my life. I got to watch out for myself, my safety, and my security. I just got to run it. I can't trust God. I prayed about it, but I still can't trust God. I still can't leave it in his hands. I still got to work it out. Okay? Let's read now. Verse 20, he said, I will appease him. With a present. Verse 21, so went the present over before him. He sent that ahead. You know, that was Christmas gift. And himself lodged that night in the company, and he rose up that night. He couldn't sleep. He'd made a lot of deals. But he just wasn't happy about this deal. And he thought, well, I got to do some more. And he rose up that night and took his two wives and his two women servants and his 11 sons and passed over the ford Jabbok. He said, I may get all my possessions, but I may save my family out of this. And he took them and he sent them over the brook and sent over that he had. And Jacob was left alone. But he still is Jacob. What'd you do? And there wrestled a man with him until the breaking of the day. Jacob wasn't wrestling with God to get anything out of God. Jacob was resisting. And God said, now, it'd be so nice if you just turn loose, Jacob. Jacob said, no, I'm a better dealer than you are. I can handle it a whole lot better. No, sir, I'm not going to turn loose. And the angel wrestled all night with him, and he wouldn't yield. Verse 25, an angel said, well, it's about sunup, and I think it's about time for the last round of this match. And when he saw that he prevailed not against him, he touched the hollow of his thigh, strongest place in a wrestler. And the hollow of Jacob's thigh was out of joint as he wrestled with him, and he said, let me go, for the day breaketh. The angel did that, and he said, I will not let thee go, except thou bless me. And he began to cling to God instead of the things that he clung to before. I've got to have you. And Lord said, if you really want me, I'll tell you what you do. Would you just tell me what you've been doing all these years? What's your name? In our language, you might have said, if anybody's here of that trade, I'm sorry, but he said, well, you know what? I'm just a horse trader. No, he did. He said, my name is Jacob, that fella that started life by grabbing his brother's heel, and I've been at my brother's heel all of my life to walk over and get everything that he's got and everybody else that I've come along. I'm a supplanter. I walk over people. I look after myself. Number one must come first. I've done it all my life. What's your name? You want me to bless you? Tell me what your name is. And when you tell me what your name is, are you tired of being Jacob? That's 1 John 1:9, the Old Testament. And he said, my name is Jacob. And God said, you know what? You just finally faced up to what I've been trying to get you to do a long time. He said, I believe I'll change your name. Then he called, changed his name. He said, I'll call you Israel. I'll make you a prince with God. You got power with God. And now you got power with me, and watch now. No longer the next day. Jacob goes out, Israel goes out to meet his brother that he bargained with and was after his life. Now look at what happened on the other end. Verse 4 of the 33rd chapter. And I'm just reading one verse. And Esau ran to meet him and embraced him and fell on his neck and kissed him, and they wept. What a meeting. Now God took care of that. But God didn't take care of that till he turned loose. Let go and know that I'm God. Now back to the 46th Psalm. Look what God says. The 46th Psalm. Be still and know that I'm God. The last verse, the Lord of hosts is with us. The God of Jacob is with us. If I can handle Jacob's problems, how involved his life became. And how mixed up he got, and I was long-suffering, and I bore with him. And when he came to turn loose, look what I did for him. I made him a prince with God, power with God, and power with men. And God said, you turn loose. And did you know when the next day when he met Esau? He said, I've seen your face like I've seen the face of God. Nobody but God straightened out this mess. Are you tired of being Jacob? Are you tired of running your life? And God said, that's a challenge. God said, you be still. You take hands off. Can you this morning put your family in God's hands? Can you put your business in God's hands? Can you put your health in God's hands? Can you put your husband in God's hands that you try to straighten out? Can you put your wife in God's hands that you try to straighten out? Can you put that rebellious teenager in God's hands that you try to straighten out? Can you put the future in God's hands? And God said, be still, fall down, roll upon, cast yourself upon, turn loose. And he said, you turn loose, and then what? You know that I'm God. Young people give their life to God, going to be something for God, and then you reach out and you take it back. No, God, you don't know best for my life, and you take it back, and you give it back, and you take it back, and you give it back, and you take it back. God said, would you be still? Would you take your hands off? And know that I'm God.